Thank you. I'm Joe Cardinelli, 1618 12th Avenue. I'm here speaking on, I believe, item number six, the tax deed donation with the property that the Garden of Eden is requesting. Is that the correct one, Mr. Chair? Anybody want to make sure I'm accurate?
Yes.
Yeah, this is the number six, yes.
I'm an executive board member for the Garden of Eden. I'm here tonight to represent the group and to explain what we do with the property. First off, Garden of Eden is a charitable garden. We harvest over 1,000 pounds and donate it to places like the Schmoll Center, Sharing Center, Women and Children's Horizon each year. There's no paid positions, these are all volunteer. What we'd like to do with the building and property is, we've been expanding over the last year, and what we'd like to do with this piece of property is utilize it as an office space, meeting location, and a place to plan and organize and orchestrate our future endeavors. So that's just kind of wanted to be brief, that's kind of what we'd like to see at work. I know there's been a process where it's, I don't know if the house and property have been foreclosed or whatnot, but I know it's gone through kind of a process where it hasn't had much luck. But I'm not privy to all those things, you know, so I'll just conclude for requesting that you guys donate to our group or whatever the request is. Thank you.
Any other citizens' comments? Seeing none, then they are closed, and we'll move on to, I have no report. Do any committee members?
No.
All right. And then we are at approval of the minutes.
So moved. Second.
All right. And are there any additions, corrections, comments? Don, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Now we are now.
Is the youth and governance part?
I assume so.
I didn't hear it.
I heard an aye, yeah.
Aye.
Okay.
So they're both ayes, by the way.
All right, thanks. All right, well, good.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. So we are now at number six. This is the tax deed of property from the clerk, Mary.
Makes me wonder.
So you heard from Joe Cardinelli on behalf of Garden of Eden of Kenosha. This is a property that I brought before you, I believe it was 2016 when we put this up for auction. It's a very small, less than, I think, 700 square foot, one bedroom, not even one bedroom home, I don't think. Has mold, has a lot of issues, no basement. It does have two storage units on there, which would be good for the Garden of Eden, for storing their gardening equipment and stuff. And basically, they're working out of someone's home right now for their office and stuff. So they came to me and asked if that was a possibility of them getting this donated by the county. Currently, we're taking care of the maintenance on it. We're getting the grass cut all summer long. We're going to be getting the snow shoveled and taken care of in the wintertime. So you know all that process. I came to you before about that. So I talked with Corp Counsel, and up until today, which John had talked to me today and said that we were going to do a resolution for it, but I'm going to let John speak on behalf of what he thinks the process should be before we go ahead and just approve this, which I didn't know until today, so.
All right, John.
Good evening, John Moyer from Corporation Counsel. In looking at this, we have to be careful, of course, that we do this legally. I think our office has looked at it, and our belief is that the proper procedure would be under Chapter 75 that we've received no bids on the earlier Class 3 notice, which is was in 2016. We believe that the next step then would have to be putting it in a Class 1 notice, which we can do as early as next week to expedite this matter. And at that point, should we receive any bid in any amount, we would have the authority to accept the bid most advantageous to the county. And so my intention would be to, again, place a Class 1 notice, perhaps as early as Monday, maybe appearing in the paper on Wednesday, which would run 1 week or 7 days, calendar days. And then, again, we could consider any and all bids that come in. Among the the factors we'd consider would be the price offered in the bid, and also the benefit of the, whatever the buyer could offer in terms of a benefit to the county. So having said that, obviously I believe that the Garden of Eden is a good, worthy cause, but I think we have to follow the proper procedure, and that's the procedure that the statute spells out. And so that is what I believe it would do.
So that is what it says we should do. I mean, there's no gray area, there's no, I mean, it says we need to do this, this, and this. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay. Do we have to take the highest monetary bid, or what we feel might be best for the community?
What the statute says is that we don't have to take the highest monetary bid, but rather the bid that's most advantageous to the county, which again is why the ad will appear, and I believe that I may be involved in drafting that, and one of the considerations will be benefit to the community. So in addition to the purchase price, that should be considered. Now again, I don't know how many bids would come in, but we'd have to look at all of them, and then we'd be able to go with the one most advantageous to the county. The law is pretty clear that first time round on the class three notice, you have to accept no bid under the, I believe it's the appraised value. And we're past that now, and the statute after that allows a bid in any amount. However, if it's below that appraised value, we have to get approval from the board.
Have we done any remediation on the mold or anything in there to this point?
No.
That I don't know. But I,
no, pardon me? We haven't done anything.
We haven't done anything in there?
No.
Okay.
No, we just went in there and looked at it before, and I mean, they're going to... And my understanding is, through the Garden of Eden, because I took them through there and they looked at it, they know the condition of the house, is that they're going to work with volunteer contractors and subcontractors and people that can come in and do the work for them to get it up to where they can actually use the facility safely. Because right now, you can't.
It was listed as is in the Class 3 notice, and I would intend to list it selling it as is in the Class 1 notice.
Yeah, I would assume you wouldn't get a bid, but that's fine as long as that's the procedure. Through the chair to Joe, are there any plans for this to, I know it's a nonprofit now, make money down the road?
No.
Or there are no plans for
not
that?
Not
okay.
Right.
That, thank you.
Okay. Yes. So this is a nonprofit corporation?
Yes.
In Milwaukee?
Go ahead.
No, here locally.
Oh, I saw just the
where
it said. You go ahead first.
We have three gardens.
I'm just wondering if we...
They've actually purchased a couple of city lots from us already, tax-deeded lots. The Garden of Eden has. They bought them when we had them on auction, and they've been using them for gardens also.
I have two questions. Have we ever done this before?
Well, I
not what you're doing. I'm talking about just donating a property to someone.
Well, I can't speak historically. Certainly in my time, which is only a relatively short amount of time with the Office of Corporation Counsel. But the law changed in 2003. I think prior to that, it was more difficult to accept a bid below the appraised value. But due to that legislation in 2003, it became a little. It's easier. It's loosened up. The restrictions are loosened up. Receiving a bid below, in terms of a donation. Other than when it's a tax-deeded property, I think it's difficult to do a straight donation. If it's something the county has purchased or owns, other than by via tax deed, it's easier to do a donation, or it's possible. But not when it's my reading of the statute is not when it's a tax-deeded property.
Okay. I guess my only other question would be, if we do a donation, does that present other issues to us as far as, is there a procedure for that? I mean, not that Joe's group isn't outstanding, I'm sure it is, but could there be others? I mean, do we have to worry about that? I don't know this. I'm just wondering, when you donate, a government donates something, are there ways that has to be done to
Right.
I don't know. I'm just presenting that as a thought, I guess.
What I am saying is that I don't think we'll be donating the properties per se. We'd be accepting a bid. The bid could be, as the statute says, in any amount, so it could be below the assessed value or below the appraised value. But what I'm saying is we're not going to be putting it out to bid for a donation at this point. We'll be putting it out to bid for a monetary amount that's bid. And again, I've said it now several times, but it says any amount, so it could be, you know, far below appraised value.
I understand, but this is asking us to donate it as it sits now, and you're saying we need to go through this procedure, and what you said, okay.
Right.
All right, thank you.
I have two questions. One, and I would like to see this donated, quite frankly, for what they do for the community, but the question I have is that there are specials on there now. Are those specials owed to somebody? They're owed to the city, they may be delinquent water bills and stuff. Is the county responsible for making that good? Because the county doesn't own, the specials belong to the municipality that's in. I suspect that those are water bills.
I believe they're extinguished after...
The taxes are extinguished, not necessarily utility bills. The utility bills, we always put a disclaimer on any of our tax deductions.
Okay.
It's up to them to look into whether or not there are any owing utilities. If we've owned the property for more than a year, then generally those are all gone.
So if that's water bills, they'd be washed out.
But it is one thing that we do tell people that are purchasing tax deed property to make sure that they look and check at utilities and the water company and to see if there's anything that's owing.
Because I remember years ago when I was treasurer, that we ended up property that was bought by somebody at auction, and then the water bills had to be paid by that person who bought it.
Right, before they could get their own water
turned on. Before they could get their own water turned on. The other question is that, are these going to be sealed bids or are they going to be open bids?
They'll be sealed bids.
So somebody could come in and bid $200 and get the property for $200. Unless...
Any amount. Yes, that is most advantageous to the county.
So we're kind of putting them in a position that they would almost have to come in with a bid of some kind? Or, I mean, that's the thing I don't like about it. I don't like somebody getting the property for $200 or $300 or $500.
Well, it has to be approved by the county board.
Okay, eventually. Okay. Right. Okay.
That would have to be approved, but we'd know why, the pros and cons of it.
Because I went out there and looked at it. And in fact, I went on Tuesday and... place was overgrown when I went back on Thursday. Today I went back on Thursday and the place was all cleaned up. So
all
we must have
cut the grass.
Yeah, that's what
so
I thought.
Cut the grass.
And you know, it needs a lot of work. The roof might be okay. The siding needs to be resided or something. So okay, I guess if that were have to do with the follow up procedure, what you say, I guess we have to. But otherwise, I'd like to see us donate it, quite frankly.
Right.
I have a question. In the event that this board was to recommend giving it to Joe Cardinale's group, Eaton Kenosha, or not, Garden of Eaton, would we be violating any statutes?
If you were to say to give it to them?
Rather than put it up for a Class A bid to just transfer the property, would that be violating any statute?
The statute I'm looking at is 75.69, and I think that it requires, again, with a tax-deeded property, first that you put it up for a Class 3 notice, the way they normally are done,
uh-huh.
which was done here in 2016 and received elicited no bids. But then, beyond that, if you're going to transfer the property, I believe in compliance with that statute that you have to do a Class 1 notice,
okay.
at which time you can accept any bid
okay.
in any amount that's most advantageous to the county. But I think that that's the procedure you have to follow looking at that statute.
So does that mean they have to put in a bid, for example, for $1?
Yes.
Yeah.
They have to be a player in the game, basically.
It has to be a sale.
Right, of some sort.
And then it'll no longer be a donation either. Then they
Correct.
Pay.
Correct.
Then you don't have the precedent.
Right. I'd rather see that than a possible problem with donation issue. Yeah,
right.
I understand.
Right, and it was brought up earlier with regard to some right of reversion. For example, if it was sold for the purpose of a community garden and then somehow that dissolved and there was a desire to rent it out, you know, for profit or who knows what, you know, purpose. You know, under a donation, I was trying to fashion it where it would be a right of reversion up to 15 years to the county if the nature of the use changed. I don't think we'd have the ability to do that if it becomes a sale, that it would go to the buyer. I don't know, unless we could make some agreement with the buyer about the use of the property for a given period of time, and even that, that would have to be worked out. Is it possible to do such an agreement by way of a bill of sale? I suppose it is, but that's a little more problematic with a sale versus. But again, I don't see a way to donate it under that statute, given that it's a tax-deeded property.
Any other discussion?
And one other good point to bring up is we have a decent outfit that wants to take on this property, and also then the county will not be on the hook for cutting the grass and snow removal and everything else. So it's one less property we have a liability for, and someone else wants to make good use of it. I think that's what we should do. Thank you.
And yet one more point that I'll bring up with what John was saying too about it being reverted back to the county if it was for some other reason. Their plan is to put a lot of money into that property. They're going to they're probably going to have to gut the entire inside and redo it just to remediate the mold and the stuff that's in there and the siding, and I think the roof needs repairing. So they're going to be putting money into it a lot more than what we probably did in our back taxes.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that we should, as long as it's a sale, I don't care that we don't have it brought back to us. They're free to do what they want with it. Mm-hmm. And I was going to bring up the same thing as Mary said. I mean, they're going to spend more than anybody would bid on it to even bring it up to being livable. So, you know, I'm okay with it. That's why I asked if we could get out of, if there is a set in stone procedure, and if there is, we need to follow it. And that way we're not setting a precedent for the future about, you know, donating property. So I think that's the way to go.
All right, so, anything else?
We don't need any motions on this. You're just going to take care of
it. We're going to move forward on it next week.
Thank you.
All right, very good. So you'd return with a resolution in the event that
a bid is received.
Bid is received
and
for them and
considering
it for
right.
Public policy reasons.
Correct. The
you don't necessarily have to come back to the resolution if you sell it, because it would be no different than any other tax-free property that you sell at auction. Just transfer the deed into their name. They pay the $30 filing fee, and
even though someone else had a higher bid, wouldn't we have to determine
if that's,
that
was?
Oh, in that case, yes.
Yeah.
If there's multiple bids, yes.
Yes.
Well, can I read a sentence from the statute? This is the way I believe it would be. Any county is authorized to sell for any amount any land previously advertised for sale after advertising the sale of such land by publication of a Class 1 notice, except that no property may be sold for an amount less than the property's appraised value. So if a nominal bid is received, it's going to be for less than the appraised value. Appraised value is in the neighborhood of $42,000, as I understand it, considering the land and the property of the improvements. Except that it may be sold for less than an appraised value, it may not be sold for less than the property's appraised value unless the county board or a committee designated by the county board has reviewed and approved such a sale, and no property may be bid unless the county board or a committee designated by the board prepares a written statement available for public inspection that explains the reasons for accepting a bid less than the highest bid. So that's the procedure.
Yeah. So
we need it to come back.
Yeah. We do.
All right.
It's going to come back.
One last question.
Yeah.
What's the time frame for your ad? Are you going to put a date?
Yes, it's
date
1 week.
Date certain. They have to have it in by a date certain, right?
Right. Yes. We'll be looking at 7 days because
okay.
It's a Class 1.
Okay.
So we'd be looking at putting it in the paper on a Wednesday and expecting bids to be completed by
following
a Wednesday.
Following.
Yeah.
Hey. All right. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe.
And we'll move on to the next item, which is the sheriff. Fleet of automobiles or vehicles. Sheriff.
Mr. Chair, members of the board. Let's see. Thank you for the invitation. I'll pass this around. Last year, at the budget process, I had a couple of county board supervisors ask us, why can't squad cars last longer?
Oh, who said that?
And it got us really trying to think of, well, what can we do? We're trying to think of, what are the issues? And something that we're trying to do in the future is we're trying to get it to all the patrol deputies have a take-home car, first of all, that want to do it, and I'm going to say deserve it. It'll more or less be a incentive to do a good job. If you remember in the past, I brought up a substation at 45 and 50. County executive and I have been trying for years to get this to figure in down the road. The reason for a substation is, as all of you know, our deputies patrol everything west of here. And they travel through the city, which isn't a big deal. We do a lot of our calls in the city. But our West End cars travel all the way from Sheridan Road all the way out to Twin Lakes or Randall. Three times a day, that Twin Lakes, Silver Lake, Bristol, Wheatland, Brighton car, I shouldn't say that, six times a day. If you take the trip going out there and a trip coming back, that car is traveling out of its district. What this would do is it would allow us, depending on how we do it, first of all, I'll go with the substation. Our substation before was going to look like a large building, a large garage to put squad cars and different vehicles in and things like that, a locker room, bathrooms, things like that. If we have our deputies actually have a take-home car, we need a meeting room. We could go to 45 and 50, use one of the conference rooms there, whatever we set up there. Our deputies could meet there for roll call at the beginning of their shift, or if technology, and we aren't there yet, if technology was so good and it's not that far off, we could probably do it. The deputies could go out to their district at the start of their shift, stay in their district the entire shift, and right now, let's just say a Randall car gets done working at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. At about 12:45, that squad car starts coming east. So for about an hour, there really is no one in that district. And that happens three times a day. About 5-6 years ago, the Twin Lakes police chief was monitoring, he wanted to increase his department. And what they did is they monitored our cars changing. And what he determined is six of the 24 hours a day, that Randall car was rarely there, because of transitions in and out. What this would do is it allow the squad cars to, if that Randall car works all the way until 2 o'clock, he stays in his district until 2 o'clock. At 2 o'clock, he goes home. So again, eliminating the need for a true substation. This year, we ordered just as many cars as we were budgeted for. It was 15, and we're waiting to get them built out. They still aren't built out yet. This is not going to be a one-year process. We'll look at that. We're going to do this within the budget, and we're going to do it. Our thought is we're going to add about five cars a year. We already do this. Our traffic interdiction unit already goes out and takes home their car. And that's so they can stay on the road. They can stay on the interstate. They can stay in different districts. Our canine officers already take home a car. Our school resource officers already take home a car. Our administration, of course, takes home a car. This isn't a new process. It's something for those that report usually directly to someplace, they take a car home. Traffic interdiction goes usually right to the interstate. We could have them fuel up at 45 and 50 rather than coming all the way down here. What I handed you, and I got this off the internet, it was done by the International Association of Chiefs of Police. It breaks down the benefits and also on the back of it, potential concerns. So squad cars will last, right now a squad car will normally go out about two shifts a day. And this will keep it to one shift. This should allow the squad cars, our traffic interdiction units, Pat Sapansky from Fleet Maintenance, with the new world system, he was nailed to print this off or figure it out because it isn't quite working yet. But he said he believes he very easily could show how the cars that are taken home by deputies now would, are definitely lasting longer, but have a lot less repairs. Obviously, if one deputy is assigned a car, they take better care of it. I really don't know how many people here, except for Supervisor Kubicki, drives a work vehicle. I really don't know. But if it's a car that you pick up, drop off at the end of your shift, you don't take quite as good a care of it. And sometimes you'll have dings or things or a wheel a wobble, and they don't find it till the next shift. So this will make it, people a little bit more responsible too. Let me see. Our goal is to add about 5 cars per year. And some years we'll probably do a little bit better than that, and other years we might not quite make it. We think it's going to take us about 5 or 6 years to accomplish this. And that's increasing our fleet by about 5 a year. I was told that each squad car for joint services needs some kind of licensing. It's about $1,300 if I remember right. And I think in the budget for 2018, I think Nancy actually proposed that into the budget. Didn't you, Nancy, $1,500 for the licensing?
I have not.
Okay, and I was wrong on that. I saw $1,300 for something. All right, but I understand that concern for the Joint Services Board. Insurance for each additional vehicle, if I remember right, burn about $300. What it also does is, and I sent all of you an email, we're after the flooding. The rain came down so fast, and this is nothing that you guys don't know. Almost every single road at some point was flooded, was blocked. We couldn't get deputies in here to Kenosha. And this would have been another perfect example of the ability to say, in a crisis situation, we're trying to get them in here anyhow. And I don't know if you guys know this, but deputy sheriff gets paid from the minute we called them and said, please come in here to work. There's a flood going on. From the minute we call them, they're on the clock. They come all the way downtown, pick up a squad car, and go all the way back out. So this will give them a vehicle to immediately respond to things. If we have a severe accident, the accident reconstruction team will have all their gear in their cars. They can respond to an accident. If we have an ice storm like we did in, I want to say, February, we couldn't get people out there. And this would allow us to get, we actually ran out of squad cars. We depleted everything we had and got everybody out. This would get people out in the road immediately when you get a hold of them. It'll also be good, people like it, at least if you're in nice neighborhoods, people like it when there's a squad car sitting in the neighborhood. It kind of is, it's a nice billboard for law enforcement in the area. So that's the majority of my salesmanship on this.
I understand 100% with the coming and going in and out and, you know, the convenience, that type of thing. My concern would be when you have somebody take home the vehicles, I mean, what's to say they're not going to use it for personal use the whole rest of the evening?
Great question.
Because I've sat on this committee when that has been an issue in the past.
Yeah, you know, these cars, each and every one of them, what you had a few years ago was a captain that took it out and he patrolled Pullman, and he was reprimanded, and he received discipline for that one. One thing that his car didn't have that all these cars have, they're all GPS. It's all recorded. If they were to take it out and take the family to McDonald's, you know where the car is every day. If we know a car is speeding, we can go back through the system and we can find how fast they were going. We know every place. If someone called in and complained, Dave Beth has a marked car, he's going to Shopko with his entire family in the car, we can track it. We can see.
Hattie, can you state what the current policy is here?
Barnum,
do you want to? I think it'd be, we can go back, but I think it's well to know what the current policy is.
The adopted county board policy by Resolution 1, November 8, 2005, on vehicle use is what the Internal Revenue Services policy is regarding this issue. IRS rules, certain vehicles are considered qualified non-personal use vehicles. Clearly marked police vehicles and unmarked vehicles used by law enforcement officers, officer must be authorized to carry a firearm, execute search warrants, and make arrests, are two of the vehicle types specified by the IRS as qualified non-personal use vehicles. Therefore, any use of these vehicles by sworn enforcement officials, no matter the nature of the use, is considered not personal use and is tax exempt.
So in other words, I mean, the policy says that they can use them for personal use.
No, it says that that is a type of vehicle which any use of that, it's always official use. Right. So
yeah, it's always right. official use. So
you're right.
So yes.
I'm going to take the family to McDonald's.
He could still be, or she could still be on call.
Sure.
I'm not disagreeing, but I think you're going where, is there a violation? Is it, if they did do that, is there a violation of state or federal law?
No, there's not.
But we could work it in our policy if they can't. And if there was a violation, truthfully, we'd take the squad car away.
Well, I would be uncomfortable without a policy like that being in place because it's happened in the past. And I'm not saying your deputies...
I got it.
I don't want to say anybody's bad, but when something, you know, is available and you just get in it and go.
There's a difference between taking the family in the marked cruiser with a light bar and a cage, unless your kids are really bad.
Some families might like that. I don't know. I don't know.
I have a question.
I still have. Have we looked into using our pole barn as some type of meeting place or,
substation.
rather than a substation? I mean, what do we have there? Could we have a meeting there?
You're talking about 158? Yeah. It isn't designed to have, there's minimal heat in it. It's like at 45 degrees in the wintertime. The conference room is going to be very small.
And it's not going to be short.
And it's not going to store squad cars. It's going to store the mobile command unit, the wheel loader, the speed sign.
So it's full.
It's full.
Okay. That's what I was asking.
Yeah.
I would not be comfortable with this without some kind of policy.
I got no issue with that at all. I agree with you.
Okay. Ken?
I concur with Jeff on that, but Dave, how many other departments are doing this?
I just talked to the Walworth Sheriff. He's trying to do the exact same thing right now. He's going to do it all next year.
I know, but how many departments right now in Wisconsin are doing this? Take home.
I never asked. I know Lake County does it because you see Lake County's deputies
you know
all
Nancy
here.
Nancy, who's doing it?
I do not know.
Can you get me that information? I'd like to know who's doing it.
I don't know if Nancy can.
Or if somebody can for the next meeting?
Yeah.
I mean, I want to know, is this a trend? Is this something that Kenosha County wants? Is this something how
further up north? Everyone does it, I believe.
I mean, I just think that's beneficial to this body to see how many people are doing this. You know what I mean? But I do have some reservations along with Supervisor Gentz on this. And my other reservation is, what's this going to cost?
We're going to do it within the budget.
I get that, Dave. I've heard that many a year. We're going to do that within the budget, but how much more is it going to cost within the budget? You know what I mean? So
what's the fiscal analysis?
Right. You know, I mean, I understand, and I haven't had time to read this, obviously, like anybody else here. Really, what's the bottom line dollar ticket? I mean, is there truly a savings, or is this just semantics? You know what I mean? And I think before we move forward, that's something that needs to be presented. You know what I mean? That's just my thought process. I mean, I understand the pros to it, and I also understand the cons to it. But as a county board, we have to decipher through it and say, is it worth it or is it not worth it?
What are the cons?
I think the aspect of, to me, just off the top of my head, potential liability, potential fuel. You answered my question because I had a question on them coming into town and leaving, where I thought to myself, how much fuel do you have to come in to punch in and punch out? But we could do that at 45 and 50. And I don't know if I really understand the concept of, are we saving on maintenance costs? You know, our miles, so basically you're saying the more miles we have, the more maintenance we're going to have. You know, I mean, because there's more hours. There's more hours on vehicles.
No. The hours are going to the vehicle. The vehicle should last about 2 more years each vehicle. The miles should end up, pardon me?
You didn't say that before.
I did. I started off with that. Because I said Supervisor Ritzlaff.
Did you hear that?
He brought up, can you extend the years for 5 years? I said, that's part of our goal, is to extend for 5 years and make them last longer.
Well, you said 2 more years. I didn't hear that.
Okay, I apologize. Then if I did, the goal is to have them last 2 more years. The maintenance, and I have to get Pat Sapansky to do it. But I got it.
The cons actually are on the second page of the article you distributed.
I've got a question. How far along are we till we'd be able to fuel our vehicles at 45 and 50?
We can do that now. This West End, like the Village of Bristol, fuels it there. Okay. Salem fuels it there. So they're doing it now.
So if we did have these squad cars going home, these individuals wouldn't have to come all the way back in to fuel up there.
All their time would be in either central Kenosha County or in their districts.
Yeah, so they wouldn't be all the way here, driving all the way there, and then we would have more overlap in Randall. You said there was a time lapse. So
Randall, there's about 6 hours a day that we don't actually have a district car out there. This will almost eliminate that.
Greg.
Just tell me this, Sheriff. When a deputy goes on duty, does he not have, like, roll call stuff?
Yep.
Okay, and if he's out at his house, he's going to go to 45 and Skype roll call. Is that what you're looking at, the building? I mean, how do you communicate with him? Is that what you do? Do you do roll call in the morning? I don't know. You guys
at the business. Beginning of each shift, they do a roll call. So what I perceive is going to happen is all the squads are going to come to 45 and 50, go to a table just like this, and they're going to fuel up at that time. And then they'll get the information for the day, whatever sheets they need to be handed out, and then they'll disperse them 45 and 50. Most of our squad cars are west of the interstate. So this will put almost all the cars almost immediately into their districts.
Why can't they do that now, though, by just parking the cars there, and they drive there, and they're going to work in their own car, and then proceed out, as you say?
That's
a good question.
Because there's not a storage facility to store the other vehicles in there. One of the things that you need to do with the squad cars is, whether it's really cold, inclement weather, you have to have them inside. There's computer equipment that's inside. It can't get too cold. So that's why all of our patrol cars with computers and all the electronics, they all go down in our basement. They're all inside. That's why we're looking to pursue low temperature, I don't know what you call it, but a facility out there by 45 and 50, it could look simply like a pole barn. And
isn't this just part of that? I don't think we didn't talk about this, but we talked a lot about this building. Why wasn't this as part of that building project?
Because with the county exec, the goal is to prioritize what's the most important. And it hasn't risen to the most important. The project that's going on, the building that's behind the detention center, it's holding all the big equipment that we have scattered all over the place. It isn't holding all the squad cars that are downstairs. If you were to do that, you'd about quadruple the size of the building that would hold vehicles. And you'd have to make it so it's warmer.
I saw recently a lot of squads over there by the detention center.
Waiting to get fixed up.
I see.
So those are the new ones that are in.
To get out.
But they're out. But my point is that they're outdoors.
There's no equipment in them.
I see.
Okay. They're just, and I don't remember if they're all marked up, because a lot of times...
No, those were marked squads that I saw. I just happened to be out there, I noticed all these squads parked next door. This is this summer.
Yep, and they're waiting to get all the equipment put into them. They're just completely empty cars right now.
I see. Okay. Great.
Yeah, Sheriff, a project like this, has anybody done any calculations on a time frame for payback? Because there's an initial cost, but then you're telling us of the savings. And how long, has anybody says how long we have to be in this program before we're actually ahead?
It'll be about 5 or 6 years to rotate, about 5 or 6 years to get all the vehicles in. And not all the deputies are taking home cars. If you're in conveyance, or it's just the road deputies. And we're about 20 vehicles short. So we're looking at, again, about five or six per year, and it'll be about an even, it's going to be about an even swap every year. The vehicles will last, theoretically, about 5 years, as long as someone doesn't get into an accident. And it's going to, like I said, we're doing it roughly under the exact same budget process. We're trying to just hold the vehicles for a little bit longer and incorporate those into take-home cars. And the way we're going to do it is, the way we're going to dish them out are to the deputies that are, I don't want to say good deputies, most, or aggressive deputies, the ones who like overtime, the ones who, if you call up and say, we got a flood going on, I want Ron Frederick out there because he's home and he's going to go do it. We're going to give it to the ones that are most anxious to go out and actually do that, whether it's the senior or the younger. The deputies union, they said, and we can take them away if someone was doing something like what Supervisor Gentz was bringing up. This is not part of the contract. This is not, if you goof up, this is a incentive. This is a bonus. You don't have to do that. You don't have to get one. We're hoping it'll keep people, give them some incentive to be more responsive. And,
So after 5 years, it would be a cost-saving measure?
What it'll do, and there's different ways to look at that, and you can twist numbers any way you want. At that point, if we were able to get everybody into it, you're basically looking at the exact same cost. Fuel's going to be the same. Rather than a squad car going out twice in a day, it's going to go out once in a day. It's going to last 2 years longer. The repairs are probably, over the course of 5 years compared to three, are probably going to be in the ballpark of the same. What you're going to have, the true benefit, is that car in Randall for 6 extra hours a day. You're going to have, when you have a flood or a tornado, people are responding right from their house and they go directly to the scene. If you have a fatal accident, people go directly to the scene. They've got all the equipment in their car and they go directly to it. The benefit, the cost will be about the same. The benefit will be the intangibles, the things you can't put a dollar amount on in emergencies. So to say that we're going to save $100,000 a year, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that you're going to have Salem. A couple months ago, they had a shooting out in Salem, and the guy, it was a suicide. They didn't know that at first. It took us 9 minutes to get there. It was at 2:45 in the afternoon. Our cars, the rescue squad, was there for 6 minutes before we had a deputy there. Our squads that were on the west end were coming in. The ones who were in the middle were on an accident. No one could go anywhere. The cars that really were out there were at the gas pumps down here. This way they'd be out in their area. So if you're looking at me to say we're going to save a ton of money, we're not. But okay. But the advantages are pretty huge if you need them.
All right, thank you.
All right.
Your deputies live in Kenosha County someplace. Right. Do all of them live in Kenosha County?
No. A few of them live up in Racine.
Okay.
And we currently have a policy. No, I think we just changed it. I'm trying to think, because we got a few people on TIU. Because we had it where if you didn't live in Kenosha County, you couldn't bring one home. And I think it's still that.
It's still that.
Okay.
I think one of our TIU was up in Racine, we didn't let them take it home.
Because then also, then you have to get deputies that are willing to have them parked in their yard all the time, right?
Absolutely. And everyone might not want it.
Want to do that?
Yep.
Okay.
And we aren't going to make them.
Okay. So, and then secondly, you're talking about this equipment. If they want to keep them home, are they going to have a garage to keep them warm?
That's a great idea. I mean, and truthfully, that I didn't take into consideration. But that will be a concern, and that may be what we have to do. Yep.
Has to be held in the garage.
Because you're talking about equipment having to be in a heated place, and then and you're going to park it out in 10, 20 below zero.
Yeah, maybe what we have to do is, in the wintertime, it would be parked in the garage in the summertime.
This sounds to me, sounds like a plan that has a lot of things to be developed yet.
This is done by departments all over the country.
I understand that, but right now you're talking about something here that has no, you have a idea what you want to do, but you don't have a, deputies that live in different places are going to not want to take cars home.
Do it already. There's probably a dozen cars that go out already to deputies.
I'm not against the concept, the idea, but I'm just thinking, how are you going to make it work? That's all, because not everybody's going to want to have a squad car parked in their driveway all the time.
Yep.
Is this the only policy, what Barna read, dealing with this issue?
We have looked through county policy, we've gone through federal policy, and there is obviously nothing wrong because agencies all overdo it.
You're talking about Kenosha?
Yeah, the policies that are currently in existence for Kenosha, there is absolutely nothing wrong with it. It falls within policy.
Because I distinctly recall a discussion. Bob Carbone was the chairman of the Finance Committee. Alan Keel was the sheriff. This issue came up at Finance, and my recollection was that the end result was only certain people could take a car home, the sheriff, chief deputy, and you had two, I'm not sure if there were two or three captains, but the captains could. And that was it.
I think that's more policy. It isn't county policy, though.
But it's Sheriff's Department policy. Mm-hmm. So what is the Sheriff's Department policy now? Is that it?
We allow people to take people on specialty units, like the traffic interdiction unit, the canines, school resource officers, deputy friendly, they all take cars home now.
Was that the policy that I'm talking about?
When Alan was sheriff, I know I had to take home car teaching the DARE program.
So that's where this policy, that's the current policy that dates back to 2000 something.
Our current policy allows exactly what we're doing.
Do all those people who take their squads home now that are authorized to take them home, do all of those people park them inside them to keep the equipment warm so they don't damage any of this computer stuff?
I never talked to them.
Huh?
It's a good question, Ron, but I don't have that answer. I know I haven't had any computers that were damaged, so.
Yeah, Barnum, what is that sheriff's policy?
I know the policy because I had to write it.
All right.
Policy at that time was for the personal use of county-owned vehicles. This excerpt that I read from, that is something that's within that policy that addressed the law enforcement vehicles. The rest of the policy had to do with all other county-owned vehicles. Certain people were allowed to take vehicles home, and the rest had to follow. The rest are not allowed to use it for personal use because the IRS requires them to be taxed on any personal use. Policy was that no personal use was allowed.
So is driving from home to work personal use?
De minimis or driving back and forth to work is allowed. There's a provision of the IRS, it's called de minimis. Slight conversion from your home. If you had to stop, a mile out of the way to get home, that was okay.
So what are you asking Dave us to do here? Anything?
No.
Disinformation.
We're within the budget, we're within ordinance, we're within federal law. I was asked to come and explain it, and I'm happy I did.
Yeah. I got a question. And I don't know how much this is a bearing. You'd said when you called Deputy Smith, I need you out here. They're on the clock. So when they're driving from their house to get a cruiser, they're on the clock? Is that true?
Yes. So and if they get into an accident, county's liable.
Okay. That's what my question, because are we increasing a work comp liability issue because they're coming out with their own squad? I didn't know. That's my thought.
I don't think that should be a big issue.
And really what happens, and I on my way home tonight, stop the person passing two people in a no-passing zone. This will add extra cars out there
right.
to help us.
Okay, I mean, that answers my question.
Okay.
Because if they're on the clock when you call, it doesn't matter what they're driving in. In a cruiser or a loan car, there's still liability.
Yeah.
So, all right, thank you.
Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, you bluntly asked what are the cons to this, and I haven't had time to read what you gave either, but I'll give you my cons straight up. The first is what I said with personal use, and I would like to see a policy. As a matter of fact, I think you should work with Barna and get whatever your policy is, you know, for all of the cars put into a policy when it comes back here. The second is financial, and I don't think that there's a financial problem with this in thinking about it, but I can understand Supervisor Esposito's question about it. I think by saving, you said cars are usually out two shifts a day. So, I mean, cars are going to be out one shift a day. That's an extra 8 hours plus travel time that they shouldn't be used, assuming they're not used for personal. So that should almost double their life, as far as I'm concerned, because you're using them half the time.
That's basically what I said.
Yeah, so I don't really see us, you know, having a big problem financially. And certainly the logistics of it, I would like to see something better out at 45 and 50, being able to store this, because I do understand the logistics, which is why I supported our pole barn as well. So, I mean, I understand coming all the way down here when most of the time you're out there. So I don't have a problem with that. But I'm going to bring up something that you touched on and might have flew over everybody's head, but Supervisor Esposito and I deal with this because we sit on joint services. You know, I mean, that's a big chunk. I mean, this year, 15 new cars need to be re-kitted.
Those are in the budget already.
Okay, yeah, but you could take the kits from the old cars, right?
We're not doing that. We're not outfitting all the cars this year. And truthfully, they aren't going to get to them all this year. We kind of had that several years ago, but I apologize, I interrupted. Go ahead.
No, that's fine. But, I mean, there is a $1,300 license fee with
yeah.
that, you know, and you're not going to get the city to pay, you know, like the Maximus study or whatever.
No.
You're not going to get 60-40 or whatever on licenses for sheriff's vehicles.
Yep.
So, I mean, that's something you need to look at.
And we'll make that work.
Okay. Okay.
I'm the one that
asked you to come here because I want to make sure that this is brought out to the committees and to everybody so that everybody's on the same page so that we can have this conversation now. I'm not necessarily against it, but I think we do need to be on the same page as to where we're going with it.
I'm good with that.
And so my cons are personal use, you know, financial. I'd like to see some financial kind of idea, and I know you're working with Pat, and I'm sure you can come up with some things. And the third is the license issue. I mean, to me, those are the cons. I think the pro is, you know, flexibility and where you are as far as a base of operations. So from my point of view, I'm just communicating with you. That's what I'm looking for.
And I'll work on all the cons that I get, and we're trying to do that. And actually, when I printed this sheet, I didn't just print the front with the pros on it. I put the other ones on the back, too.
Right, but I didn't get to read that because I just got
it. I didn't put it on your supervisor.
Yeah.
It was
a blank paper. I can understand.
All right. Anything else on this particular agenda?
Just real quick. Because I don't know how... my question I had, I guess a little concern I have is about communication. You know, I think it's important always when you have some things to say to your deputies that they don't get lost by not being, they may lose something by not coming down here. I don't know that. But I'm just saying is, I think if there's new things, I can relate to other business where just doing everything by the internet now isn't always, and Skype is not his best either. So,
no.
if you're not concerned about the 911 either, so
no,
that's all.
The goal isn't to Skype each other. The goal is to make our meeting place, our roll call or tab room, which you're, I think you're.
That's what I'm getting at, yes.
It's going to be at 45 and 50.
It's not there now, is that correct?
Right, it's down here.
Okay, so they all come here, get in their cars, have your meetings, and all go back out that way.
But we're working on doing it out there.
Yeah, really all I would need is just a room like this to have them do roll call in a bathroom.
And is it, the captains do the roll calls?
The sergeants and lieutenants for each shift.
Okay.
So they'll move out there. They'll do the roll calls out there.
Okay. Face to face.
Yeah, that's okay. All right. That's all.
All right. Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Sheriff.
Thank you.
Let's go on to the next item, which is number 9. The bills, and do you have that back to you?
You
do. All right. Is there any discussion on these other bills?
I would like to let you know that our youth and governance actually read them, and he had questions about a couple of them, and I was impressed. So I just want that in there for the record.
Well, this is the time.
I got them answered before the meeting.
Did you get them answered?
Oh, yeah, I got answered.
Okay. All right, do you have any questions?
Report of the administration.
Be nice.
Are there anything?
There are. Bob, I don't know if you have some.
I don't know.
Okay. Barna has the general fund report.
Okay.
This was sent out to the committee members, but if you need a copy of it, I make copies and pass it on. It's in the same format that I've done in the past. This is the first slice of what the general fund projection is for 2017.
Bigger.
Oh, I didn't make enough.
I went in the wrong profession.
I made
in the wrong line.
Yeah. Sorry about that. I thought I punched 12 on the machine. How long did we end up getting?
I'm just saying.
You're a numbers guy. What's up?
No.
Divided by two.
The last 2 weeks I've been, I don't know how many budget meetings, so I got numbers all. Lots of numbers flying through the brain.
Can we just wait for him to? He's going to make copies, right?
Yeah.
Okay. While we're waiting, if I may, Mr.
Sorry
Chairman.
About that.
Just a couple things I want to.
We know that some of the employees at Brookside have been coming to county board meeting and complaining about certain things, and a couple of us went over there and were given a tour of the facility, and we were well satisfied with what we were told, and this idea, the carpet thing, you know, there's a question as to people fall and maybe hurt themselves, they don't hurt themselves as their carpet, something to do with the food. And we found out that was the food was prepared fresh now. It's a complete change. So I was well satisfied with the friend giving us the information that she gave us as to how the place is being done. So for what it's worth.
All right, very good. Go ahead.
As you may recall, 2016, we ended up, despite large health insurance deficits, we still ended up adding about $225,000 to the general fund, which put us at 28.35% of general fund operating expenditures, which is just short of $65 million. That's the first paragraph there. These are the items that would cause increase and decrease to the general fund, as I'm estimating at this point. Items that would cause increase to the general fund would be we're running surpluses in the federal inmate housing revenue of $1.1 million. In public works, estimating the operating expenditures revenue surplus of $430,000. Sales tax surplus of $400,000 over budgeted. Circuit court and clerk, county clerk revenue surplus of $230,000. Workers' compensation and liability insurance, combination of the two, surplus of approximately $125,000, and some other smaller items that add up to $100,000. Offsetting that would be items that decrease the general fund, including increased overtime and personnel costs in the sheriff's department, offsetting because of the larger number of inmates. A health insurance deficit at this point of $140,000 compared to over $4 million at this point last year. Human services deficit in the area of placements and mental health costs of $500,000. Treasurer tax delinquency and interest on taxes revenues deficit of $270,000. Our normal reserves that we use to balance the budget during budget time of $230,000, and increase in tax delinquencies of $200,000. So that nets out approximately about the same as the items that would cause increases to the general fund. So at this point, I'm conservatively estimating that we'll break even compared to the budget.
Okay. Do you want to mention the Standard & Poor's rating announcement?
Oh, you will.
Okay, very good.
Yeah. Couple things. It's really odd to me that you hit the number exactly.
Well, these are estimates, so
okay.
Nothing is perfect.
Okay. I see how
I'm good.
The massaging and the stuff to make it be exactly equal is very odd. the thing, explain to me human services deficit, placements, mental health costs. I've been on that for years, and I want to know how that rates, whether we're having more or less. What's the deal with that?
That was an amount that was reported to me by Lori Staves. They're expecting a higher number of placements. I think it's juvenile placements out of town, costing
more money,
and then mental health costs.
You don't really know for sure. Okay, that's fine. I can appreciate that. I'm asking it off the cuff here. So that's something we want to look into, because I've been harping for years on being prepared for mental health. And if we're in the negative on that, we got to look for things to help us take care of that and be prepared for it.
I can report that the next meeting.
Yeah, I'd appreciate it.
From this point on, every month I'll have this report and I'll be updating it. So.
Is that something I want to know? I've been, like I said, following it. I go to all the meetings on it, and it's something that, you know, I've been asking for psychiatrists, and I mean, trying to do preventative stuff, and it's really something that's got me going. So we can't be getting hammered with placements and mental health issues, because that's only going to get worse. So
I believe it was $250 for each one of those. It was two.
So last year, so it's down from last year.
Pardon?
It's down from last year.
The number.
Mental health is down.
Is it down from last year?
I believe so.
Yeah.
The numbers are going downward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's good.
Yeah, Greg.
Quickly on health insurance. Mm-hmm. You're projecting that for 540?
For the entire year, correct.
That's really variable, isn't it? I mean,
sure.
That changes. How did you come up with that number?
What I do is I project based on where we are now with our expenses, uh-huh. offset that against any revenues, and then project that for the rest of the year, and that's how I come up with
that calculation. All right. That's fine. I'm just saying that's sometimes a little tough to do with a self-funded plan, that can have some spikes. Okay.
Right. Okay. I could be. Oh, the other thing I should mention too is, by this point, I did an analysis going back 10 years, and by this point, whatever my estimate is for this, is within $1 million one way or the other.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
I don't want. Knock on wood, this to be
no,
the
I understand.
First year out of 10. But
in my opinion, it'd be awful great if this happened like this. That would be
right. I agree.
Extremely good. So.
All right, any other discussion on this point?
I got one. On this clerk revenue surplus, how much, what's the percentage that the clerk gets of that surplus? Something I don't know about.
The clerk surplus has to do with the...
No, I'm talking, that was a joke. I was wondering how much money my wife gets out of the surplus. I didn't get that, but.
She's not bringing it home.
Well, I guess not.
Now you waited until she left before you said that.
Thanks to the passport revenue.
Passport revenue.
We're doing lots of passports.
That's good.
I go through this every year just a little bit. When we talk about borrowing and some of these projects, putting the weight of just taking it over our what's in our surplus Is that something we just leave it the way this is? Is this something we can constantly talk about? Now, we're going to, you can see we're doing some $13 million and $5 million bonding. We're 7.3 over our minimum. Does it reach a point where we can start thinking about going to the reserves to start paying for some of these things? Just someone else give me an opinion on that, because I bring it up every year. I mean,
you know, this is a public policy issue, and we raised it to 17%. Now, when we made our presentation to bonding agencies, Standard & Poor's and Fitch, you will find that those counties which are AAA, and we're AA+, they're at 25%. And one of the reps from Fitch asked us whether or not we would have any plans to raise that 17 to, let's say, 25%. I think we read that to mean if you want to be a AAA, you need to be at 25%. Now, for the last, I'm not sure how many years, number of years, five maybe, you should know exactly. We have exceeded that 17%, and if you look at the 28.3 here at the bottom, that's reflective in 2017, how much over 17%. But we're still at 17%, right. So I guess if you're a member of the team at Standard & Poor's and Fitch and looking at this, you might say, well, they're at 17, this is kind of a fluke, an unusual year, they're not really AAA. That's the way I would read their question. Now, public policy, is that important to you or not to be AAA? I think it was important to the Finance Committee in general and the Board in general that that was our goal. We talked about that. How do we achieve that goal? Well, I was going to suggest that at some point, be it at the budget time or pre-budget time, we talk about increasing at 17% to 25%, if that's important to you. Now, if it's not important to you what your bond rating is, and you want to start dipping into reserves for regular, ordinary expenditures, I question whether you'll even hold your AA+ rating. We do have a policy, and I can't repeat the policy. We could bring it to the next meeting and distribute it, but I clearly know we cannot do it for regular, ordinary stuff.
I understand that, but I guess my question then would go to the bonding guys, the rating agencies. What's the magic line between your reserves and your debt load? Where's that magic line? Okay, if you got 25% reserves, but you got astronomical amount of debt, one of the two has to change to get your AAA bond rating, wouldn't it? Wouldn't there be a trade-off between? Okay. Isn't that kind of like a magic between the two?
We're not at the astronomical debt. If you compare what our debt capacity.
Well, no, I'm not. I exaggerate astronomical.
I'm going to answer to your question.
If you compare our debt here in Kenosha with our capacity, what is the county capable of bonding to based upon state legislation, not just figment of our imagination? There are standards by which we could increase. We're well within that capacity. And Barnum, what is that capacity, or Patty, either?
I don't know what the exact figure is right now, but well, like you said, well below that.
Yeah, I mean, that is something that Mike Harrigan talks about from time and time again, there and now. Now, if you believe we're loaded with debt, I mean, I think that's a belief, but if you're saying, well, are we within the state statutes? We're well below our capacity as determined by the legislature.
That's fine. What I'd like to see is when, from the rating agents, is what are these magic numbers for us to get? How important is the AAA? Where would they look at too much debt? Where would they go to a minimum surplus? I'm just saying, I'd like to hear what these, do we know these? We don't know these things?
Well, they're not going to tell you that except to say that AAA communities or counties are 25% or greater. But they're not, and they're going to say, are you within your capacity? And I'll get that for you at the next meeting. But I know that Harrington has said time and again there and here, and I'll get that exact number, that we're well below. That's important, to be well below. Right. If you're hitting it or exceeding it,
you're not going to get more.
Then, you know, then you're in financial trouble. We're not in financial trouble in terms of the standard. If you believe that it's too much, well, as opposed to what?
I'm not saying that. I'm just trying to get in my head, how you balance the three.
Exactly, you're the next meeting.
Okay.
Patty will get it.
Okay.
I know for certain that we're well below it.
Okay.
And I would add to that in the rating reports that Patty has, and she's going to pass out, that we got based on our rating results. It has in that report sections relating to general fund and our debt load, and it gives it a rating of satisfactory, adequate, and so that they take all that into consideration when they do the overall rating. So those two, that's addressed in that report.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been at a couple of the bond rating meetings, and you have to just present the best case you can, and that's how it is. Unfortunately, they don't give you guidelines. The guidelines you have to use are what Dave Geertsen has come up through 800 years of doing this, and also by looking at what AAA counties have. And I think Terry's exactly right, and I would support going to 25% as far as a number. I would never, ever vote to spend money out of our reserves unless it was a crisis situation. I mean, just to try to lower it a little bit. I mean, we're weakening ourselves. The thing you have to remember is to getting to AAA is it's a beautiful thing. I mean, you save so much money in interest at that point that getting to AAA is something I've strived for 10 years. You probably strived for a lot longer.
You remember, though, I agree
100%. Oh, I know, and I'm not taking it as...
It's just like saying, here's your quota, and we got to chase this quota. Is it realistic for us?
Right, right. And I believe me, I've asked Dave a number of times, well, what are the things? What, you know, try to pick the brain of... You know, what are they really looking
right,
for?
Exactly.
And, you know, one year can be slightly something different than another year. They're not going to give you a playbook to get to AAA. But I think we've been coming over the years closer and closer and closer. And I love the idea of taking it up to 25%. And we don't need to spend our reserves. And we are way under the amount of money of debt that we could have. And I think we've been very fiscally responsible with our debt and managing it, because now is the time to do that with the interest rates so low to get a lot of our infrastructure done and some other things. So, I mean, I know you're not saying it, you know, contradictory or anything, but these are the realizations that this body has been trying to achieve for a number of years. Thank you.
I'm going to add on that. I was at the bond rating meetings the last 2 years, and we were all in shock when Fitch told us, you need to hit two out of the four criteria to become a AAA county. And he pretty much told us where we're lacking. And we were all like, wow, they've never said that. It's all a mystery. It's all smoke and mirrors. It really is. You present your presentation, they come back with. So I think that was beneficial this year more than most, where we know where we have to go. And I'll share that with you later. You know what I mean?
Okay. Where is that?
Chicago.
4 points.
Oh.
What are the 4 points is asking you now that you brought it up?
You have to hit two of the four. And one is equalized value. The other is reserves. The other is
capita income, I believe.
Per cap per income. And I forget what the fourth one is.
And was there anything in there? What percentage of budget increase every year?
No.
And you know what? Because Gateway is AAA. And the last 2 years, because of declining enrollment, because of employments are up, we had to raise our budget 6% and 5.5%, and we're still AAA.
What I know,
I'm not suggesting that's anything. I'm only saying it's got nothing to do with what your budget goes up. It's got nothing to do with that.
I'm just concerned if it's reasonable.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Patty, why don't you state those points if you could?
We go up 6% the last 2 years.
In that, what Supervisor Esposito was talking about when the rating agency gentleman was telling us the four different areas. There was a lot of information, so it wasn't always easy to keep track of. And I will state, just as a side note, both rating agencies stated that Kenosha County rates very high in management, and that is one of the areas we can control. He talked about a debt ratio, and I thought in the report he actually mentioned it, but we were at 10.8% and we needed to get below 10%. That debt ratio included pension liability, things like that. One of the items I was going to report on is that we did go on the bond rating trip. We went to S&P and to Fitch,
Both were really very good. This was my first time going, and I personally found it to be very enlightening and a very, very positive experience. To me, I was really impressed with how impressed they were with Kenosha County as a whole. They released our reports, S&P yesterday and Fitch today. They have affirmed our AA plus rating and with a stable outlook for both agencies. That's good. I really thought Fitch was going to put us at AAA.
They pretty much told us last year we got upgraded. Yeah. And the chance of you getting upgraded back to back with years, you might as well have another 100-year reign.
Yeah.
I think one of the things they mentioned was the fact that we don't really control this too directly.
Right.
Per capita income is too low here. Right. We need higher paying jobs. Maybe if we get some of the industries they're talking about, maybe that will go up, but right now they're too low.
And that was the report that I gave on the Workforce Development Board, that Kenosha County's wages have gone down 2% in the last 2 years. Yeah. And the decline is because the jobs that are replacing are not the ones that the manufacturing jobs used to pay.
No.
So the average wage in Kenosha County went down 2%. That was Workforce Development.
But they were impressed with Kenosha County with our diversity of employers. They were extremely impressed because for years we were AMC, Chrysler, and now we have a multiple Uline, Amazon, multiple employers that are bigger to higher end employers, and they were very impressed with that. That we're continuing to diversify our county and create stability. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yes, right.
Do you know which five counties are AAA?
I believe Dane,
Brown.
Waukesha,
Brown.
Ozaukee's got it.
And Washington or Ozaukee? I think it was Washington. That's four. Probably one other one.
It's got to be Ozaukee. It's hard to imagine it not.
I can get that.
Not in Milwaukee.
Isn't Brown County the one that has the lowest delinquent tax too?
I believe they do.
Yeah,
they do.
Right.
Because we're at 7 and they're like at 3 or something.
They do have the lowest. Yeah.
All right. I have the S&P and Fitch reports here if anyone wants hard copies of them.
I'd like them. Yeah.
And we can have the electronic version sent out of that as well.
Is this?
I want hard
copies. This is one or individual?
There's a letter with S&P and then the report, and Fitch is just the report.
Okay. Good. You have the Fitch?
Yes, I gave you Fitch.
You did? Okay.
Yes.
I guess a little quick. On the borrowing, statutory and what the rating agents look at are different. Right? I understand our statutory type way under that. I get that, but do they look at, statutory versus what a rating agency, how far apart are they?
I don't think we can answer a question like that because when you go there.
She just mentioned it.
Huh? She did.
She said a debt ratio. All right, how about a debt ratio then?
Right.
Right. He mentioned that debt ratio is, and I don't remember what it was in relation to, needed to be below 10% and we were at 10.8.
How would that compare to a statutory type of thing that we're at?
I don't think that was a similar kind of.
There is no statutory, I think, percentage of it.
I thought there was. I mean, I can't. Accounting.
Have the precise answers.
I thought we had some limit.
There's a borrowing. The statutory rate has to do with borrowing capacity.
Yeah.
Specifics. Or if they were here, he would have those specifics.
Probably pull them out of the
I don't recall what those numbers are, so I'm not going to speculate. But I'll have to.
All right.
We'll put it on the agenda.
Okay.
We'll
thank
put
you.
The 17% versus 25% on the agenda as well.
All right.
We'll be prepared for that. Maybe you can even have Dave here. Ask. Okay. Is that ratio?
I can state that The policy does say 17% is our minimum, but it also has a target of 25%. It states that if we do go below the 17%, we have 3 years to restore ourselves to 17%. And it states that we will not draw from the general fund reserves to pay for normal operating. Those are items I can quote from the policy.
What would you recommend for our number, rather than 17%? Could you guys make a recommendation to us? I know we've got a target of 25, a limit of 17, but bringing that bottom number up.
Yeah, I think you're right. 25.
All the way up to 25.
Yeah.
It's a big number.
Because we've exceeded that for
5 years.
I think approximately 5 years. We can double check that, but that's my recollection.
We're 28 to 29 this last, correct?
Yeah. And they actually said 20 for the other counties are at 25. So
correct.
I think that is that's a number.
We're doing 28 to 29 pretty consistently.
Yes.
It's hard to compete with those other counties. I mean, we can't realistically with what
we
have.
I disagree. We can be the best in the world.
We're surpassing
them
now anyway.
I don't know.
You can unplug.
I mean, economic conditions.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Thank you.
Sure.
The people that live in Osaka County and Dane are way
they don't only give out 5 AAAs, so it can be 6.
Thanks.
One other thing I want to remind the committee.
Go get it, Joe.
I will.
A special finance and administration meeting on Tuesday at 6 o'clock for the bonding resolutions.
And then
committee of the whole at 6:30.
Yeah.
So what's
right.
the bonding thing? Is that something that came up?
No, this is we're getting ready to sell the bond.
Sell the good bond.
So this is the resolution.
All right.
You'll be getting that in the mail.
All right. If there's no further business, I'll entertain a motion.
Second.
All those in favor.
Did you say good? You said good.
Are you coming to the
truly?
No measuring.
Bond.
And you can make the